on the live line with us, State Representative Adam Jarko. He is from the Clear Lake area, way up in northwest Wisconsin, a district that used to be represented by my friend Harvey Stauer. Representative Jarko, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you today?
Did you ever meet Harvey Stauer?
Just briefly. I was away for college and grad school and didn't get a chance to meet him in his prime.
I keep forgetting how old I am. But anyway, he was a nice man. Everybody liked him.
I think everybody liked him.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right. You have come up with something. I heard you talking with Charlie Sykes about the other day. And this is a homeowner's bill of rights. And obviously, this has gotten a fair amount of attention since the Kelo decision in the Supreme Court about, you know, private property being handed over to another private entity a number of years ago. And then the whole Donald Trump situation in Atlantic City. Tell me how you decided to come up with this list with Senator Tiffany.
You know, we've been hearing these stories of eminent domain takings and regulatory takings and privacy issues for some time, and decided, you know, that it was time to really try to address the problem. And we think the very best way to do it is to begin the process early, before the legislative session starts, and begin talking about these issues, get some momentum going, get some hopefully some bipartisan support for some of these ideas. And as we then get into the early part of the session next year, we can start putting these into specific legislative proposals and get things passed early on in the session, hopefully.
What are Wisconsin's laws? I know you're an attorney. What are Wisconsin's laws regarding the type of thing that happened in Connecticut that allowed the government to take that woman's house from her, and then the development never ended up happening? I know they wanted to put a wealthy development on some waterfront project. Could that happen in Wisconsin, or are there laws that against that here?
I actually think it probably could happen. There was some legislation post-Kelo to try to address the issue. Unfortunately, I don't think that it had quite gotten into it. And there's two areas where I think we can specifically focus to strengthen some homeowner protections in the eminent domain law. And the first area is the one that you're touching on, which is kind of this idea of quote-unquote economic blight, where people, where the government can kind of consider a property blighted, not because of the way you and I might normally think about blight in terms of it's just a crummy structure that's rat-infested and a you know, something that's an eyesore in the neighborhood, but because the governing body determines that it could be put to better, more higher economic use. Well, I think that's something that we need to tighten up. The second thing that we need to tighten up is what's called the public purpose part of it. So, as you know, the only way that government entity can take property through eminent domain is if it's for a public purpose. And that was kind of the fight in Kelo was, is taking property and giving it to a private corporation to use because you'd have a higher tax base and some jobs, quote-unquote, a public purpose? Well, I don't think that's a public purpose any more than some of the other things that we see going on. And so we can just narrow that definition to public purpose so it is specifically for the things that I think were really intended for eminent domain. You were talking about things like, you know, roads and public buildings and things that are broadly for the public good, not for a few, and certainly not for private corporations.
So there was a pretty big case right in Madison with the Overture Center tearing down a block, and there was one holdout, and boy, it was really contentious, and he took them to court and really made them do some dances. Now, the Overture is operated by kind of a public-private partnership, but it's an arena or, you know, opera house or sporting venue. Is that for a public purpose?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I think those are the kind of questions that we want to have people weigh in on over the next number of months. I mean, I would tend to err on the side of not public purpose unless it is for something that is really important. I guess I kind of err on the side of property owner rights. So if that, I don't know the specific facts of that situation being four and a half hours away from Madison, but you know, if the government in that case or the public-private partnership wanted that property so bad, I'm not sure why they can't go through the normal channels that the rest of us have to go through when we buy property, and that is to make an offer and make a deal.
And this really sometimes really comes down to that. You know, when the government is on the side of, is actually taking a disproportionately side of the big developer or the, you know, really pushing the limits of what a public purpose is, it's not that the person doesn't always want to give up their property. It's that they want some sort of fair compensation, right?
Well, and the thing about a home is that it's really more to a lot of people than just, you know, sticks and shingles and siding, right? I mean, it's where you raised your kids, and maybe your grandfather built the place. And I mean, there are some people that have incredible sentimental value tied up in their home.
Oh, I agree.
And so just to compensate somebody based on what the, you know, quote unquote fair market value is, dramatically underestimates the value of that home to a lot of people.
All right, you've got some other, and I agree with you, and I think that Kelo decision, people's feelings on it crossed all sorts of political and party lines. It was not a, you know, that was a really divisive case that didn't really fit into the right-left spectrum that we normally see in America. All right, you launched this from someone's property who really has an interesting case. Tell us about that, Adam.
Yeah, this was a fellow named Dave Meixner, and Meixner is a, I think it's fair to characterize him as a fairly liberal recall signer who bought some property in Pierce County, and that's in my part of the state, south of where I live.
Uh-huh.
And he bought it for to be a nature preserve because he's an artist. He makes wonderful, beautiful pottery. He makes beautiful paintings and photographs. And he uses that property for that purpose. So not only does he live there, it's also his business. And the village of Bay City has decided, in its infinite wisdom, to cut his parcel into three pieces to build a walking trail through it. And Meixner is beside himself that this has happened. And not only that, when we were down there for the press conference, we met a number of the members of the community who just thought that this was wrong and shouldn't go forward. And so that's why we wanted to highlight his specific case. Is to your point, this crosses political and ideological lines.
Yeah.
I mean, if your home is being taken, it really doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat or a socialist or a right-wing ideologue. It hits you the same.
You know, it's this property that they could have purchased for a while, right? It had sat vacant. He goes and buys it and fixes it up, and then suddenly they come along wanting to put to split up the property like that. That seems so unfair. And obviously, you know, when you have private property and you've got people walking through it like that, it kind of creates a burden for you.
Well, not only that, it makes the property effectively worthless. I mean, who's going to buy that property when
right.
people are walking through it? And the final thing that makes this particularly egregious is Meixner has made an offer to the village to actually reroute the trail in a way that's workable and would still end up in some eminent domain taking of his property, but it wouldn't destroy the property value. It would kind of more run along the edge of his property, and thus far they've rejected and not been interested in that proposal.
Is that case going to end up in the court?
Well, he has a lawyer who we talked to a little bit, and luckily for Dave, the lawyer is a retired guy from the Twin Cities who is kind of doing this pro bono for him, and I think he's willing to fight. So, you know, depending on how the village reacts to some of this that's going on, if they persist, I would suspect it will end up in court.
Is this kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back for you, or is this something you've been following? Are there cases like this that are coming across your desk from constituents?
Yeah, it's not the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, I'm kind of interested in land use issues anyways. I kind of have a libertarian streak, and so the idea of utilizing government power in this way really sticks in my craw. And so there have been a number of cases. There was a case that you might remember just last year in Madison where the city was going to take an apartment building, that pretty nice apartment building, had 25 or 30, you know, units occupied, low to middle income folks, to build like a park or something. That to me seemed like a little bit of a problem. There's a case at the U.S. Supreme Court right now out of St. Croix County where this nice family has owned property along the St. Croix River for decades, and they own actually two parcels next to each other. And the county, after they bought the property, changed the rules and decided that those two parcels were now just one parcel since they were owned by the same family, and therefore they could never develop or sell that second parcel.
If you're on the St. Croix River, those parcels are worth a fortune.
Yeah, and the problem is that if that property had been owned by anyone else other than this family, literally anybody else, they would be allowed to develop it. But because they were owned by this family, the county and the DNR have effectively said, sorry, your property's worthless.
That seems discriminatory.
They have a public law group out of California that's representing them, and I think their oral arguments are this fall in front of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Paul from AMS with us on the Big FM 93.7.
We are having an inventory clearance sale, and we've had some people come in and take excellent advantage of that, and we've got lots and lots of really good equipment left, too.
So your location?
Right near the corner of PD and Verona Road on the southwest side of Madison. You can call us at 608-274-7400, amsmadison.com, or you can even like us on Facebook.
Sounds great. Paul from AMS.
State Representative Adam Jarko is with us. He is from Clear Lake, Wisconsin. He, as well as State Senator Tom Tiffany, have introduced a homeowner's bill of rights. There's 10 things in here. One that stuck out to me was the right to fly the flag. Now, it's Flag Day. I don't know if you know that, but it's Flag Day today. Are there really people that are prevented from flying flags?
You know, it's really funny. There actually are. There was a story that I think Wisconsin Watchdog put out today that had a number of these from around the country. Now, what happened back in, if I'm remembering the year right, it's 2005 or 6, Congress passed a law prohibiting, in most circumstances, homeowners condo associations from prohibiting from flying the American flag. What we propose to do is codify that in Wisconsin, make sure that's out here. And then add to it the Wisconsin flag. We really haven't seen too much of it here in Wisconsin. It seems like we're a little more common sense, so this is a little bit more of playing defense.
Well, if you can't fly your flag in America, that seems a little antithetical to what we all believe in. All right. Some of this stuff can get dicey. And some of the stuff you have here is kind of broad. You don't really need a bipartisan coalition, probably, to codify this into law. Are you looking to do so? And can you tell me where you think there may be a difference of opinion?
Sure. So I would say, broadly speaking, on point number two, broadband, point number three, energy security and affordability. That's talking about the propane crisis that we had in rural Wisconsin recently.
Right.
Eminent domain. Probably some on privacy and maybe some on smart growth reform. I think we could get some bipartisan cooperation on most or all of those points. I would say in the place where we talk about controlling property taxes, my friends on the other side of the aisle haven't been as willing to go along with the push to get property taxes under control. Probably where we talk about regulatory barriers, that might be a little bit more of a hard pill to swallow, but you know, I'm pretty committed to trying to work with the other side of the aisle on a number of these issues. So I'm hopeful that we could get bipartisan support for most of this stuff.
Do you think the uniformity clause in the state needs to change? Do you think there was a constitutional amendment to change it? I think everybody agrees that the property tax is an incredibly regressive way to tax people, and the burden over the years has kind of been shifted to the taxpayer. Do you think that maybe we need to change our state constitution?
You know, I'm not sure that we necessarily need to change the uniformity clause, but what we might need to do, if we want to make some serious headway on property tax reform and reduction, is talk about a constitutional amendment for things like a greater sort of homestead protection, and that would, because it would be in the Constitution along with the uniformity clause, it could coexist together. I mean, for now, you really couldn't do something like that because you'd end up having a different tax structure potential for different kinds of property. So, you know, to some extent, the uniformity clause has served us well, to some extent not. So I'm not sure that I'd want to, I'm in a position at this point to say we ought to change it, but we ought to kind of put everything on the table and really start talking about this, because you're right, it is a regressive tax, and it's a tax that really punishes new home buyers, young families that are kind of living on the edge, and the elderly, and that's a real problem.
Well, I noticed, you know, a lot of people do, at least people that have a little bit of money, is they go license their cars in Florida and can make Florida their home address, and they sell their home in Wisconsin. They may come back here, but I would think we would lose a fair amount of money because of people doing that.
Oh, I think that's true, and it's not just you know, losing property tax revenue, because remember, those same people likely sell their more expensive home and they're back here during the summers in maybe a trailer or a smaller home, and so you lose some property tax revenue. But in addition to that, you lose all of the other income revenue
right.
from those people. And so if you have kind of the upper income bracket that is escaping, it to some extent is counterproductive. And you know, I have seen it firsthand time and time again where people leave and the reason they stay, and it's not just to Florida, they'll go to Texas or to South Dakota, you know, these very low tax states, and that's where they want to retire.
Finally, what about this whole issue of lake access for people that buy property on lakes and the government comes along and tells them they've got to share access to that lake and beachfront property?
Yeah, I mean, I think we struggle in that area because we have, again, in the Constitution, the public trust doctrine, which we've all come to know and love and think is a really important doctrine. It does not provide you with the right to walk across people's property, though. It provides you with the right to be in the water. And to some extent, you know, there was some guidance that thankfully the DNR decided to pull back on after we raised a little bit of an issue with it, that encouraged people in the water to spend a lot of time looking at their neighbor's house, taking digital pictures, measuring with a range finder, documenting whether the grass was cut, and doing this twice a year and then turning it into the government. And I said, come on, guys, this is not what we want to be in the business of doing. It's kind of, I termed it, and they thought it was hyperbole, and maybe it was a little hyperbole, but I termed it as you know, encouraging neighbors to spy on one another. We just shouldn't, if I did that in a subdivision in Middleton, I think someone would probably call the police.
I would guess. Well, I think this is a real fascinating issue, and I'm glad you brought it up, and I don't know whether I agree with every provision, but I certainly agree with a lot of them, and I hope this does create some sort of bipartisan dialogue, not just for the sake of kumbaya, but because I think it affects everyone, and I think it might engage the public to actually get involved in something, because who, you know, most people have private property.
Well, and I think most people, one of the points in here that I think broadly people can get behind is the privacy part. I think increasingly with technology, people are really interested in protecting their privacy, and that cuts across partisan lines, you know, talking about the Fourth Amendment and people's privacy rights.
All right. Thank you for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
State Representative Adam Jarko from Clear Lake. He is a Republican.
Slysoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.